Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to REC Limited Investor Conference Call hosted by DAM Capital Advisors Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sanket Chheda from DAM Capital Advisors. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thanks, Aya. Hello and very good morning to all of you. Thanks for joining this call. We have with us the entire management team of REC today, and the call will be driven by Mr. MD, sir, which is Vivek Kumar Dewangan, who is Chairman and Managing Director, and also Vijay Kumar Singh, who is Director of Projects. Without further ado, I'll hand the call over to Mr. Vivek Kumar Dewangan for his opening remarks on the strategy and the results we just went by. We'll follow that up with the Q&A session. So over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sanket. Good morning to all the participants from India and good afternoon to all the participants from Southeast Asia. I'm very happy to share with you the fabulous annual results of REC for the financial year 2023-24. Our approvals has seen an increase of 34%. We sanctioned projects worth $43 billion in the last financial year as compared to $32.2 billion which we had sanctioned in FY23. The disbursements have also grown by 67%. Our total disbursement stood around $19.3 billion last financial year as compared to $11.6 billion in FY23. Our loan asset has grown by 17%. In FY23, our loan asset had grown by 13%. Now total asset under management is about $62 billion. Here I would like to make it very clear that REC management and board have decided to have a clear-cut roadmap, and we are targeting to double our asset under management to about $125 billion by the year 2030. And if we are able to sustain this growth of 15 to 20%, we'll be able to reach. In case our growth momentum is more than 70%, we'll be able to reach this target of $125 billion asset under management by the year 2029 itself. The interest income on loan asset has grown by 19%. Total interest on income on loan asset was about $5.5 billion. Total income has also grown by 20%. The one significant feature is that our profit after tax has grown by 29%. Our total profit after tax at the end of the financial year was about $2.12 billion, profit before tax, and our net profit has seen an increase of 27%. It was about $1.68 billion. The management has made very conscious effort to reduce the cost of fund. We were able to bring down our cost of fund by 15 BPS from 7.28% in the last financial year to 7.13% is FY24. The spread has also improved by 41 basis point from 2.45% to 2.86%. The net interest margin has seen an increase of 19 BPS from 3.38% to 3.57%. Our return on net worth was about 22.17%. You might have observed that our market capitalization has increased by 290% in the last financial year. One more distinguishing features for the last year was our approval for renewable energy projects increased by 533%, and we covered the entire ambit of green hydrogen, green ammonia, pump storage hydro projects, large hydro projects, solar module manufacturing, solar power plants, electric mobility, wind turbine manufacturing, wind power generation, and hybrid solar and wind. Going forward, we are targeting to increase our renewable energy portfolio to about 30%. Right now, our renewable energy portfolio is about 7% of total asset under management. It is about $4 billion. About $4 billion is our asset under management under renewable energy project. We are trying to increase our renewable energy portfolio by 10 times to about $40 billion by the end of 2030. Why we are so confident that we have a huge pipeline of projects. Last year, we had sanctioned projects worth 1,36,000 crore Indian rupee. And in the current financial year, we have a huge pipeline of projects amounting to more than 1,75,000 crore. And since the turnaround time for renewable energy projects is higher and it gets commissioned over a period of 2 to 3 years, we see that a lot of disbursement will happen from renewable energy portfolio. One more thing, that Government of India had allowed us to diversify into non-power infrastructure logistics in the month of October 2022. In FY23, we had sanctioned infrastructure logistics projects worth about $10 billion. And in the last financial year, we had sanctioned projects worth $5 billion. Our asset under management under non-power infrastructure logistics is about $6 billion. And we are anticipating that our total asset under management from non-power infrastructure and logistics will see a fourfold growth to say about $25 billion by the end of 2030. One more thing has happened, that Government of India has decided that this renewable energy is intermittent in nature and we don't have natural gas resources. So the base load will come from coal-based capacity. The additional coal-based capacity would be required in brownfield projects only. For that, about 94 gigawatt capacity has been identified to be brought in by the year 2032. The next 8 years, all the approvals for this additional coal-based capacity will happen next 2 to 3 years. So there also we see a huge potential for REC. We'll be able to share about 30 to 40% of this coal-based capacity. Additional capacity would be coming in next 8 years. Overall, power sector is on upward swing. Last year, power demand increased by 8%. And in the current financial, in the last month, in April, power demand has increased by 11%. With the introduction of revamped distribution sector scheme and late payment surcharge rules by the Ministry of Power, lot of improvement in distribution sector is visible, clearly visible. The AT&C losses came down by 5% in FY23, and for FY24, the final figures will be known by the end of June. We see a huge improvement in AT&C losses. Government department dues are getting paid in time. The legacy government department dues and legacy subsidies are being paid in equated monthly installments. And so much so that now the current subsidies are being paid by the state governments to the distribution companies quarterly in advance. This is overall increasing the operational and financial efficiency of distribution companies. The dues to the generating companies and transmission companies have become very regular. They are paying, and the legacy dues under late payment surcharges would be cleared in next 2 to 3 years. After this revamped distribution sector scheme gets over, next 2 to 3 years, there will be modernization scheme which is being planned by Ministry of Power. And I just forgot to tell you that prepaid smart meter, which is part of RDSS, is going to play a very significant role in improving the overall financial health of the distribution companies in the country. after RDSS period is over and the modernization is over next 4 to 5 years, country will still require a lot of capex for upgrading the infrastructure, because distribution infrastructure, all the pole, wires, the distribution transformers are quite old, 40 to 50 years old. So there will be a need for continuous upgradation of distribution infrastructure. So we do see a business potential that distribution sector will be providing us good business opportunity next 10 to 12 years. So going forward, our vision is very clear. By the year 2030, we would like to double our asset under management to about $125 billion. 30% of it will come from renewable energy segment. 15 to 20% will come from non-power infrastructure logistics, and 50 to 55% of asset under management will come from conventional coal-based generation capacity, distribution and transmission sector. With this opening remark, may I request Sanket to take the discussion forward.
Yeah, operator, you can announce the Q&A.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Maruk Aljania from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for the opening remarks. Sir, my first question is on this new RBI draft circular. So basically, I just wanted to know, of course, please do share your comments on the same, but I had some specific questions, which is that, you know, of your 5 trillion of loans, there are some loans to distribution companies which would be term loans. So they would also qualify under the RBI circular, right? What proportion of your loan book roughly would qualify as being impacted by the RBI circular, and then if at all you've calculated any rough impact? And my second question related to the same topic is that, say you have, you know, renewable plants, wind solar plants, their tariffs are only 2-2.5. So even if lenders were to pass on higher rates, how would they sustain, you know, how would they meet their DSRC? And also, you know, for these renewable projects, some approvals are always pending at the time of disbursals. So how do you tackle that? Because here you are not supposed to disburse till all approvals are not in place. And that's never the case in some power and even in some industrial projects. So these were my questions, sir.
Thank you, Maruk, for asking a very pertinent question. This is the burning topic as of today. Let me first clarify that it is only draft guideline which has been issued by RBI. They have sought comments of all the stakeholders by 15th of June. So this will be applicable to all the banks and non-banking finance companies who are involved in project financing. And this draft guidelines pertain to these projects under construction, for which additional provisioning is proposed to be introduced. For the under construction projects, this additional provisioning is supposed to be 5%, and those who entered in operational phase, the provisioning is proposed to be 2.5%, and those projects who are commissioned and they are having positive net operating cash flow, the provisioning will be limited to 1%. But it has to be effected in a phased manner. By 31st March 2025, only 2% provisioning has to be done. By 31st March 2026, 3.5% provisioning has to be done. And by 31st March 2027, 5% provisioning has to be done. It will be phased over a period of 3 years. Now, having stated that, As you are aware that REC is non-banking finance company and we are following Ind AS accounting standards. As per RBI's income recognition asset classification norms, this additional provisioning for NBFCs following Ind AS will not be routed through profit and loss account, but the preparation for the same will be done by way of impairment reserves. So our profit are not going to be affected by this stipulation. Our net worth is also not going to be affected. We have done a detailed analysis. Book value is not going to be changed. Only effect would be on our Tier 1 capital. So, and we have adequate capital adequacy ratio as per RBI's norm. Our minimum capital adequacy ratio is required is 15% and we are having about 25.82%. For Tier 1 capital, the RBI statutory minimum requirement is 10% and we are having Tier 1 capital to the tune of 23.32%. So it will have impact only on Tier 1 capital. That would also be in a phased manner over a period of 3 years. As you are aware that we can take exposure to a single project to the tune of about 30% of our Tier 1 capital, which is at present about 19,800 crore. And for group of projects, we can take exposure up to 50% of Tier 1 capital. So right now, our exposure to single projects is normally not more than 15,000 crore actually. So even if this Tier 1 capital gets reduced by say 2 to 3,000, it will not impact our approval process. Now, coming to the specific question asked by you, that a lot of our loans are supported by the state government guarantees. This RBI guideline would not be applicable to these loans which have been supported by the state government guarantee. About 40% of our loan is supported by the state government guarantee. Then there are non-capex loan like late payment surcharge, liquidity infusion scheme, RBFF, revolving bill payment facility. All these loan will not be impacted by this draft RBI guideline. And distribution sector capex like IDS's loss reduction works, etc. They are all supported by the state government guarantees. So that's why they will also not be impacted. The impact will be there in the generation segment, both conventional generation and renewable energy generation. But we are going to seek, we are going to give a detailed response to RBI's draft guidelines. The interpretation about date of commencement of commercial operation, whether this would be applicable only the projects which are delayed, because the spirit behind draft RBI guidelines appear to be that the projects which are under construction, which are getting delayed, which requires closer scrutiny by the lenders and closer monitoring. So that also will seek clarification. Those projects which are under construction, I do appreciate that conventional coal-based generation and this large hydro projects, they somewhat get delayed. They don't get commissioned in time. But there will have to do this up to 5% provisioning by the end of 31st March 2025. But as far as our renewable energy portfolio is concerned, out of this renewable energy portfolio, about 35,000 crore Indian rupee, about 80% projects are already commissioned actually. The new project which we are sanctioning, which will be under concern, or that this guidelines would be applicable. It's still an early day because we are supposed to give our detailed comment to RBI by 15th of June. But overall, going forward, we see that it is not going to impact adversely. In fact, we welcome this move by RBI because this will lead to closer monitoring and scrutiny of these under-construction projects.
But sir, what will be the tax implication of taking directly through impairment reserve? No tax deduction, na?
There won't be any impact on the tax per se, because the tax in any case is on profit before tax. So on that, the tax implication will be there, which and anyway earlier also was there. So it's only appropriation of the profits. After that, the impairment reserve is created and it is counted in the net worth also. It is only a buffer which is there. It is not a free reserve, but it is there in the net worth as such.
Got it. But sir, just a follow-up question. So basically 40% is out of the purview of these guidelines, right?
So more than
that. It is more than that. So I will project Mr. Vijay Singh for the clarification.
Right. So you asked about how much of the distribution portfolio would attract this provisioning requirement. Let me just tell you that the total book size under distribution segment is close to 25.75 billion. Out of which the capex, which is supposed to attract this provisioning requirement, is only 9 billion, which is just 35% of total distribution portfolio. So that is the implication in distribution portfolio. On 65% of loan, which are non-capex, which are in the form of LPS and LIS, which we mentioned during COVID time, will not attract these provisions.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much. Thanks a lot.
Can take next question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning and thanks. First question is that if assuming this RBI surplus were to come in the current form, I mean with that assumption, will it sort of lead to change in competitive dynamics in the lending space to the power sector project? You could be comfortably positioned and you are sort of focused, but will it lead to some banks, I mean, whosoever are currently present, kind of withdrawing or so going slow in the power sector loans? So, I mean, how will that play out? And the second part, if at all there is sort of impact that is going to impact, having impact on your sort of your own capital and all, will sort of you be looking to pass on some prices or to us? Of course, there is no P&L impact, but definitely it is going to impact your TL. So will there be some kind of some frictional cost that will be passed on to the borrower? We have a question. Thanks.
As far as the banks are concerned, they are not following the Ind AS. So entire this provisioning which is required will be routed to the profit and loss account. So they will be hit as far as the banks are concerned. Though in our case it may not be so, but some of that may have to be passed on to the borrower. The impact of that, whatever the increase is there or the impairment reserve which we are required to create or the bank per se also, so there some additional impact can be there by way of the increase in the lending rates.
So in that scenario, do you see sort of a benefiting from that, that competitive dynamics changing? I mean, if at all the banks are passing some rate increases, will you also sort of looking to benefit from that? And if at all the banks were sort of going slow, will sort of your share in the power sector loan will see some uptick?
Thank you, Avinash, for asking this question. Yes, we do see that there will be a scenario where we might be benefited. Some banks may withdraw from this kind of competitive atmosphere. They might not go for project financing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Gaurav Agarwal from 91 Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, one part is, the existing AUM. I need to ask on these revised guidelines. So you covered very well on the existing AUM. My question is more related to, the incremental book on the generational side. So how do you think, the industry players are going to react to it? And also, for yourself, because accounting treatment for the existing loans can be rooted from the impaired reserve. But what about the incremental loans, sir? What will the accounting happen for the loans which we are going to write from today onwards? Or let me know on the date this guidelines become, effective.
See, for the incremental loans, also the same position is there. We have to just create the provision as per the Ind AS and as per the IRAC norms of the Reserve Bank of India. So the differential which is there, provision which is required as per the IRAC norms and that as per the Ind AS, that has to be created by way of impairment reserve, by way of appropriation of profits. So as such, for the incremental loans also, as well as the existing loans also, the same treatment will be there.
Okay. Okay. But sir, for the incremental loans, will it impact your pricing? Will you be, you know, pricing your loans a bit higher just to, you know, account this change in provisioning?
Finally, will you turn them to this?
Yeah, we'll see that actually some newspaper reports have also come that banks are also making a representation to RBI. They are trying to request RBI to reduce this additional provision 5% to about, say, to 1-2%. But we'll have to see the final guidelines actually. But yes, we'll have to pass on some this. We'll be able to pass on to the borrower. But the another this silver lining fact is that our cost of borrowing is going to come down in after Q2, Q3. Once this cost of borrowing comes down, we'll pass on the, then it may perhaps balance out actually.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shweta Daptardar from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for the opportunity, and thank you for the elaborate explanation. So just the my first question is slightly repetitive. So did you mention that 40% of our overall loan book should sort of be kind of impacted by this new circular?
No, I did not say like that, actually. Only those conventional generation portfolio is about, say, our 145,000 crore. Out of that, 60% projects are already commissioned actually. For that, it will not be 40% of this conventional generation of 145,000 crore, roughly about 60,000 crore, this would be impacted. And renewable energy, I told you that, or 35,000 crore, out of that, 80% is already commissioned actually. And the going forward, whatever new sanctions we are giving in respect of renewable energy, they'll get covered. So say, roughly, to the tune about maximum 1 lakh crore portfolio in going forward, which will be impacted by this draft RBI guideline. Or total asset under management about 5 lakh crore. Out of that, 1 lakh crore, about 20% asset will get impacted.
Right. So, but you covered only the conventional generation renewable part. How about the remaining 15-18% of electromagnetic and infra projects? Will those also attract this new circular requirement of provisioning?
Thank you, Shweta, for asking this very pertinent question. This electromechanical component like MMRDA, metro project, MSRDC, express highway project, they are all supported by the state government guarantees. It will not be impacted at all.
Okay, so you mean to say that, sorry, I'm just sounding repetitive. So you mean to say any project which is said that will not attract this extra provisioning requirement?
That is our initial understanding. That is what is our initial understanding based on the regulations issued in the current form. I think this, we hope that this will undergo some change. And we will evaluate whatever issues you mentioned. All those issues will be evaluated and then we'll come out with accurate understanding on these issues.
We had some discussion with RBI earlier actually with regard to exposure norms. We had detailed discussion with the top management of RBI and the common wisdom which emerged from after the interaction is that for exposure, as far as exposure is concerned, they are not going to take into account those loans which are supported by the state government guarantee. Ms. Bhavija, you would like to supplement?
No, I am just offering that, submitting that. In fact, the regulations which have come recently, needs a lot of deliberation and many stakeholders will put forward their views on this. Again, the discussion will take place and then finally acceptable guidelines will come for the implementation. So, these are the preliminary comments which are being made by our company. But let us wait for the final guidelines. We'll also put forward our view on that. And some of the things which may also come for relaxation also in the later parts. Let's understand it and let's wait for the right time.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Aditi from CD Research. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, Aditi, please go ahead.
Good morning, sir. So my first question to you is, given your expertise in assessing non-renewable projects, how well do you think is your rank and file equipped for handling sanctions of renewable projects?
How well we are equipped?
Yeah, for let me share with you that government had allowed us to diversify into non-power infrastructure logistics in the month of October 2022, and we had taken a very cautious approach actually. We have ramped up our manpower strength. We have brought in experts from different fields pertaining to infrastructure logistics. Now we are very well equipped to appraise these infrastructure logistics projects. We have very strong entity appraisal, project appraisal teams, and we do have experts on board. But since we are getting sufficient business from conventional generation, renewable energy, so we are going to be very choosy about selecting this infrastructure logistics project. Only those infrastructure logistics projects which are having good asset quality, where entity is strong, where revenue cash flows are assured, only those infrastructure logistics projects will be financing.
Okay. Could you please tell me the difference between the expertise required while you assess the renewable and non-renewable projects?
Yeah, the different kind of expertise required. Like for conventional generation, the entire this how these plants get erected, the balance of plant, this coal evacuation system, ash handling plant. Similarly, for renewable energies, different kind of expertise required. The sourcing of the material, the installation, the maintenance is different renewable energy portfolio. But for infrastructure logistics, if you are going to sponsor airports, ports, metros, road highways, so we need to have sector experts from this field who will be able to understand the nuances. So we have taken conscious efforts and we have brought in experts from all these fields who help us in appraising these projects.
Those who already works in these kind of projects?
Yeah, those people who have already worked in this kind of project, we have taken them on board.
Okay, sir. Sir, and my second question to you is, what is your estimate of provisions that may seek reversal in future?
Okay. Our gross NPA is about 13,800 crore. And out of that, about 7 projects are heading towards liquidation. That is amounting to 2,222 crore. For this, we already made 100% provisioning. And some projects have already been resolved, like Lankomarkanda, Dance Energy, Bhadreshwar, Nagai. So that for that that amounts to about 5,000 crore, for which we had made closing of 70%, but we already got some write back from these projects, which we already factored in. Remaining amount is about 7,000 crore. And we see that good resolution coming from this project, like KSK Mahanadi is one of the best operating asset, which is under NCLT. Its TRA account is saying 10,000 crore. The admitted claim is about 29,000 crore, and we hope that, and we have made provisioning about 58% provisioning we have done for 52.4% provisioning we have done, and we expect that it may lead to 100% recovery in KSK Mahanadi, because a lot of interest has come, more than 30 expression interest have been received. Similarly, Tinner plant in Nasik, for that we had made 80% provisioning. For that also, we are getting more than 11 companies already submitted their expression interest. There also we see that our haircut would be limited only about 20 to 30%, not more than that. There also we'll get right back. Then Hiranmay project is there. There also we see good resolution happening. And TR Energy, we already done restructuring. So entirely, in sum total, we can say that we are expecting write back to the tune of 1500 to 2000 crore in the financial year FY25. And we hope that all this still asset would get resolved in the current financial year itself and will become net zero NPA company by the end of FY25.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Niharika Jain. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
So again, I want to understand a bit on this RBI provision, because we always emphasize that we want our renewable energy at competitive rates, and we almost have 130,000 in the sanction pipeline. So because of these impending norms, do we feel that we'll be going slow in the sanctions, or we'll be revising the sanctions?
No, we'll not be revising the sanctions actually. As you are aware that Government of India is committed to install 500 gigawatt capacity by the year 2030. And so far, the commissioning which was happening was about 12 to 14 gigawatt capacity per annum. But from this year onward, they have stepped up their ambitions, and per annum they are targeting installation 50 gigawatt capacity. So these capacities are in the pipeline, and we are quite confident that we will be able to support this renewable energy portfolio projects which are coming in a big way. And we have very diversified portfolio in the RE portfolio also. Like, let me give a breakup. Last year, we sanctioned project worth 136,516 crore. Out of this, large hydro projects constituted about 32,450 crore. Pump storage hydro project was about 28,304 crore, followed by solar about 21,000 crore. Then module manufacturing was 21,565 crore, followed by green hydrogen projects about 8,000 crore we have sanctioned, electric mobility about 8,000 crore, wind turbine manufacturing about 3,200 crore, wind projects about 3,500 crore, and hybrid solar wind about 10,098 crore. So here in this segment, large hydro and pump storage projects, they do take longer time for execution. So there, this provisioning, addition provisioning will have to do whatever final guidelines come actually. And normally the other projects, solar, wind, hybrid, they do get commissioned in time, and lot of push is there from the Ministry of New and Renewable Energy and the entire Government of India. So we hope that all the developers will try to adhere to timeline, and they do commission before time also. There's a lot of projects we are getting commissioned before time.
So basically, I wanted to understand, because again, hydro and pumped, as you said, will take more time, and major, most of the time the DCCO is extended for these projects. And we have already sanctioned these projects at a particular rate. So do we feel that we'll need to revise to at least maintain a decent spread for ourselves as a company?
Yeah, the sanction is done where we have made provision that interest rate gets reset every year actually. And plus, we do anticipate that going forward, our cost of borrowing will also come down. Perhaps it will balance out. The need for increasing due to additional provision may not be there if cost of borrowing comes down.
Okay. And my next question is pertaining to that only, that our reset period is say 2 to 3 years. And if this comes, suppose it gets implemented as it is, again, that's an assumption. So our reset again would take another 2 to 3 years. So we feel that our margins would get compressed, because we won't be able to pass it on, say, for another, say, 2 years whenever the reset comes.
Our reset is...
So the projects that we are lending now, like we have done 1,35,000 for renewable, the interest rates are linked with our card rates. And these card rates are subject to change. We keep reviewing these card rates from time to time. And whenever some disbursements happen, that is linked to our card rate. Interest rate is then linked to our card rate. That is one. And the reset is, in all cases, is 1 year. So all new sanctions, what we did in past was, of course, was 3 years also. But these recent sanctions are with 1 year reset only.
I'm talking about the older sanctions only, which is already there in our book, in our 5 lakh crore AUM. There would be AUM which will have a reset of 2 to 3 years, and 20% of AUM will be subjected to, say, these norms. So do we...
I think you have missed out actually. I had clarified that out of 5 lakh crore this asset and management, most of them are already commissioned. Only 1 lakh crore projects are under construction which will get impacted. And as far as renewable energy projects are concerned, out of 35,000 crore loan book of renewable energy, 80% is already commissioned actually. Only 20% is under construction. So about 20% of 35,000, around 7,000 crore projects are under construction as far as renewable energy projects are concerned. But yes, those projects we have sanctioned last year, they'll come into construction phase this year, and it will take about 2 to 3 years for.
And my last question would be on these IREC norms, where, so are we planning to kind of increase our ECL percentage?
Sorry basically, to interrupt, ma'am. Could you please return to the question queue for follow-up question, as there are several participants waiting for their turn.
Regarding the ECL provisioning which you are saying, that is only in respect of the stressed assets, that is the stage 3 assets, not in respect of the standard asset provisioning. So ECL provisioning, in any case, we are calling as per the LGD and PGD which is there, and also as per the rating of the borrowers. So that in any case will be like that only. There won't be any impact on that.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Manoj Jain from Wellington Management. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. My question might be repetitive, but still, I would like to check with you just clarification. So for any new lending to, say, renewable power, can you give me some sense how much the cost going to increase for the borrower if the draft deadline is implemented in the current form?
Let me be very frank with you. It's not likely to increase any amount, actually, because like we are planning to raise green bonds, which will be to cater to the green projects only. So green finance, when we are green bonds we are raising, we are getting lower interest. We'll be able to pass them. That's what I am stressing time and again, that for renewable energy project, our borrowing cost is lower actually. So and any increase with the additional provision will get offset by the lower cost of borrowing.
Clearly, you have a benefit there. You can raise green bonds, and you might not be able to pass through. But maybe if this green bond is not available to you, and you basically raise funds from conventional sources, and this draft is implemented, can you give some sense, like, if this 5% provisioning under construction stage, how much the cost will increase for a borrower? Is it 50 bps, 100 bps? Like, just some sense around that.
Minuscule amount.
Yeah. Okay.
There won't be much impact because there is ample funds which are available for the green financing. It's not only the green bonds. There are a number of lenders who are willing to lend at slightly lower rates as compared to the normal raising which we are doing, both in domestic market as well as the international market. So there are enough funds which are available, and the differential is about 10 to 15 basis points as compared to the normal borrowing which we are doing for general purposes, for conventional generation also. So their differential is already there. And since our cost of borrowing has already come down from 7.28 to 7.13, and this year we are anticipating the rate cuts which are likely to happen, it may come down to about 7%. So as such, we won't reduce the rate, so the rates will remain almost stable at which we have lent at present.
Okay, maybe I'll just ask one more way. Like, given you mentioned, like, India is planning to implement 50 gigawatt every year of renewable power. Post this draft, you think there are going to be some slowdown given cost of funding might go up for some of the developers, or will this change will not impact that pipeline at all?
I don't see there is any slowdown, but the pace will is going to increase actually. You see, you will have to wait for the budget which will be coming in the month of June, July. There will be major push on this infrastructure sector. We are anticipating that major push to their infrastructure, including power sector. So the government directive is going to be very clear with regard to infrastructure projects. So I don't see any, and government is committed to make all enabling provision to facilitate this development and infrastructure, since we are aspiring to become a developed country by the year 2047. Government has to make all the enabling provisions. I don't see any slowing down of these infrastructure projects.
Got it. And just last information, so this thing will have zero impact at all on the projects which are already running, right? Which you have, whether it's state guaranteed or not, is for private developer, projects which are already running, making revenues, cash flows, zero impact at all, because you don't have to change any provisioning at your end, right? Or anybody else.
Actually, we are having our own card rates, which are quite different from that of the banks. So banks are having the benefit of the CASA. So they were giving very competitive rates. So they may have to increase the rate, but our rates in any case were almost similar to that. So we have reduced our rates. Now it will be almost at par at what our card rates are. So there won't be any increase in our lending rates as such. But there won't be much competition from the banks per se, because they may have to increase the rates. As such, our rates will remain stable. There won't be any change in that.
Okay, got it. Thanks for answering my question. Really, really helpful. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Manoj.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nishant Shah from MLP. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, sir. Can I add me?
Yeah, please go ahead, Nishant.
Yes, hi, sir. Sir, a couple of questions. You mentioned earlier in the call that the government projects would be out of the scope of the circular. Is this mentioned somewhere in the circular because we must have missed it, or is this like some legal opinion that you've taken? Like, just trying to build some conviction around the vast, like the government guaranteed projects being out of the scope of the circular.
No, it is not mentioned anywhere, but we had detailed deliberations with RBI last year actually with regard to, there were certain concern about the exposure norm. That time we had detailed discussion with RBI management and the common understanding which was, which emerged was that from the exposure norm they are taking out this state government guarantee loans are being kept out of the purview of these exposure norms. So this, due to RBI guidelines, our Tier 1 capital is going to be affected. That will impact to our exposure. As for exposure concerns, we are very clear that state government guaranteed loan are not to be counted. Yeah, they'll be out of the purview.
That is clear.
Okay, and so the second is around the differential accounting treatment between NBFCs and banks in this regard. Like, so far you've just seen like RBI kind of take these kind of actions which prohibit like, you know, too much differentiation between large sized NBFCs and banks. So like if banks are going to be so disproportionately affected that, like, you know, it creates and creates less competition for you. I'm just trying to fathom, like, if there is something in the back of RBI's mind to kind of like make the accounting treatment at par, whether it's giving banks some exemption or leeway, because it seems a little counterintuitive looking at how the RBI has been functioning of late. Trying to kind of like minimize the regulatory arbitrages between banks and.
Let me tell you that the spirit behind RBI draft guideline is closer scrutiny of the under construction projects. Historically, the under construction projects are normally delayed in the country. So, the broad focus on this under construction project. With regard to competition from the banks, Sanjay has already clarified. Sanjay would like to supplement.
Any, actually, you are saying about the accounting treatment in case of banks and NBFCs. This was your question, please?
Correct. Yes, so basically we said you can just, even on incremental projects, you can just take the difference between the India's provisioning requirement and the prescribed by the circular as a net worth adjustment to the impairment reserve, whereas banks will not have that either. And does that kind of like help NBFCs like you, NPFC kind of like do better? I'm just trying to think about that a bit more. Is that something, is that interpretation first of all correct from our side? And second, like, is there something that like the RBI can do to kind of like allow banks the forbearance or like prevent you from using this kind of accounting treatment and passing provisions to P&L or something like that? That's what I'm trying to understand, because in recent times seen the RBI kind of like plug these kind of differences. That's just the question.
As far as the accounting treatment is concerned, the Ind AS was followed in case of NBFCs from 2018-19. So banks, in spite of number of opportunities given to them, so RBI did not implement in case of the banks. Mm. So still it is not being implemented.
Mm.
Whatever the provisioning they are doing in respect to the standard asset as well as the other provisioning also, that is rooted through the profit and loss account. While in case of Ind AS, the provisioning as far as the standard asset and other assets is concerned, that is done on the basis of certain systematic methodology which is there regarding the LGD and PD which is there. On that basis it is estimated. So the provisioning as far as the standard asset is concerned, it can be even lower than the 0.4%, which is statutorily required by RBI prior to this circular. So Ind AS, the total provisioning is as per the methodology which is there for ECL computation. So in case of the banks, that is not there. They have to pass it through the profit loss account itself, while in case of the NBFC, it is not like that. So at present also, we have to compare the provisioning which we are doing in respect of the ECL with that of the provisioning which is required as per the reg norms. And in case any difference is there, say in case it is lower than the reg norms, then an impairment reserve is required to be created. So same thing will be there going forward also. While in case of banks, it will be routed to the profit loss account itself. Actually, why it was not implemented in case of banks, there is a purpose also for that. There is a reason also behind that. Why there was so much provisioning which was required. The capital is to be infused by the government of India in case of the banks. So that was the main reason why the Ind AS was not implemented in case of the banks, while it was implemented in case of the NBFCs.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Umang Shah from Kotak Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. I have a couple of them. Sir, now, while we appreciate that on your existing back book, there might not be a material impact, right, as bulk of the projects are already operational, but don't you really think that the new guidelines does impair our ability to grow in a meaningful way? Where I'm coming from is that in your initial comments, you also allude to a fact that there is a possibility where banks and players like yourself might pass on some of the incremental incremental costs, which will obviously alter the viability of some of the projects that we intend to finance. So although the sanctions pipeline at this point of time is looking fairly good, how much of that eventually gets converted into disbursements? Do you really think, is there any risk to that number? And also, as a proportion, currently the share of under construction projects is relatively lower, but as we keep increasing or keep growing the book, this proportion will eventually increase, right? So to that extent, there will be material impact on our capital ratios as well. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on these points.
There won't be any impact on the capital ratios. It is only the Tier 1 capital that will be impacted. All other ratios will remain same. There is no change in that. The reserves, the net worth will also be same. It's only the impairment reserve, which is not a free reserve, which will not be available for distribution purposes or any other purposes, for general purposes per se. But otherwise, it's only the Tier 1 capital which will be impacted, which will have an impact on the exposure which that we can take in respect of any single borrower or group of borrowers. Otherwise, there won't be impact as far as profitability is concerned, net worth is concerned, book value is concerned. There won't be an impact on any of the figures. And as far as growth is concerned, so we'll have to grow at a faster pace than at what we than anticipated at present.
I don't think any slowdown of this project, actually. I have already made it very clear. There'll be major push from government also for infrastructure sector. So they'll be making all enabling things. Even if cost of fund goes up, it will not, is not going to slow down this progress of the infrastructure projects.
Right, right. Got it. Because, sir, I mean, when we are talking to some of the other other players within the ecosystem, they are fairly circumspect about the growth prospects, either on the infrastructure side or on the power sector side. So I mean, it's quite interesting that you have a view that the growth will not get impacted in a meaningful way. Sir, the second point which I wanted, which is more of a clarification, at this point of time, two points which you mentioned. One, that these norms might be applicable only to projects where DCCO extension has happened, or will it be applicable to all under construction projects regardless whether they are within the guidelines or not? Is there any clarity on that point as yet?
It will be applied on all under construction projects.
All CapEx projects.
So we have made the detailed analysis. It will be affecting all the under construction projects, despite whether it is DCCO shifted or not.
But in our view, it should be applicable to the DCCO extended projects only. For that, we will make a request to the RBI. Let them make an analysis and come back to us.
Sure.
And let me reiterate again that we don't see any growth is not going to be affected. Our growth will continue to be on upward trajectory only.
So we have to go by project also. In this trend asset provisioning of about 0.5% which we have maintained, that on individual projects it may be even 1% also.
Yeah.
So depending upon whatever the risks are there in respect to that project, the higher provisioning is also there. On a on total basis it is 0.5%, but individual project basis it may be 0.15% also, 0.1% also, or 1% also. So as such, depending upon the DCCO and all these things, we already take into consideration that, and according to that, a provision of standard asset is also maintained under the Ind AS also.
Sure. And sir, just a last clarification in extension of the previous question, question asked by the previous participant, assuming that the regulator does not really distinguish between projects which are guaranteed by state or central government, in that case, how big can be the impact for us versus what we are quantifying currently?
That is not likely to be the case, because in case you see the capital adequacy also, the risk factor which is taken in respect to the state government guaranteed projects is 20% as compared to the other projects which is 100%. So the different dispensation is given in respect to the state sector projects which are guaranteed by the state. So for exposure norms also dispensation is given, and earlier up to 2022 even these were outside the ambit of the exposure norms also. So time to time a dispensation has been given in respect to the state government guaranteed projects. So we assume that it will be now going forward also it will be applicable, because the risk factor which is there in respect to such projects is much less. Both FSA is also there, PPA is also there in respect to those projects, and they are commissioned on time also.
And one more thing we mentioned earlier, that 40% of our loan book is secured through state government guarantee. Out of that 40%, roughly 30-35% is for non-CAPEX funding towards LPS, LIS and RBPF sort of funding. So only 5-10% maybe is towards the project funding. So what we said about 40% is not for the project purpose. It was largely for non-project, non-CAPEX lendings.
Understood. Okay. All right. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rohan Vora from Envision Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, Rohan, go ahead.
Yes. Sir, thank you for the opportunity. So, sir, my first question was that when you said that on the existing loan book, you calculated a 1 lakh crore kind of a loan book that might be impacted. Would that include the projects which have not reached the operating cash flows and the 20% repayments from the peak debt? So would that be part of this 1 lakh crore?
Yes.
Yes, that will be part of the 1 lakh crore.
Okay. Those also require lower provisioning. So then this number will be reduced for the 5% limit that we are talking about, correct?
5%, 2.5%, 1% depending upon the stage of the project.
Okay, so everything is included in this 1 lakh crore?
Yeah.
Got it. Sir, and now going forward, the thermal opportunity, as you said, of 94 gigawatts, and then, we expect to get a 30-40% share from it. So are those projects backed by state government guarantees? How would be the pricing on that? And can you throw some light on that?
Yeah, you might have observed that our lending rate is the highest in respect of coal-based capacity only. It varies from 10 to 11% actually. This 94 gigawatt capacity, some additional impact will, because additional provisioning, some impact would be there. That will be able to pass on actually, because you see the ecosystem, the competition, as far as competition from other financial institutions are concerned, there is less competition as far as coal-based capacity is concerned. So there, we don't see that our business will get affected, even if some increase in the lending cost is there.
Got it. So basically, we have the capability to pass on in case of thermal projects, is what you are trying to say.
Yeah.
And sir, just one more question. What would be the current reserve, the impairment reserve or the provisioning created on our books as on March 24?
Maybe impairment reserve is required to be created in case the provisioning as per the Ind AS is lower than the reg norms. Our provisioning is already higher than the reg norms. As such, there is no impairment reserve at present.
Got it. And sir, if I can squeeze one more question. So when we say that, you know, we intend to reach 10 lakh crore or $125 billion by FY30. So just a rough calculation gives me a growth rate of around 12-13% on the loan book. And then we also intend to have a higher growth rate. So any clarity on that? I mean, do we see loan book growing faster than 12-13% then?
Yeah, if we are able to, like this year, our asset grew by about 17%. If this 17% growth is continued, then we'll be able to reach this 10 lakh crore by the year 2029 itself, in next 5 years, not 6 years. So it is more likely actually to, but I am slightly conservative. I'm not giving this bullish figure. But if we are able to maintain this 17% growth, then we'll be able to reach this target in FY29 itself.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shreya Shivani from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Most of my questions have been answered. Sir, one question was that during the press meet, you had mentioned that there are about 9 or 7 projects which have to be liquidated this year. These are your bad assets. So what is the approximate size of these out of the 138 billion stage 3 we have? What is the size of these? That's my first question. Second, sir, just going back to the same regulation point only, I had some interaction with some industry experts who said that if these regulations on standard asset provision lead to lower liquidity availability or in the market or higher lending rates, private capex is something that could be impacted. So that really goes, that becomes very counterintuitive to what the government and then what the regulator are trying to do. One is trying to push capex and others regulation may end up leading to determinant of private capex coming in. Any comments on that and what kind of feedback are we going to push RBI towards on the same?
Let me respond to your first question. This not 9, 7 projects are heading towards liquidation. Total value is about 2,222 crore, for which we already made 100% provisioning. Okay, now would like to respond to the second question.
Although everything is still in draft stage and we cannot really say with certainty, but what we look at the current draft regulation is that, of course, it may perhaps, and we are not very sure, impair the ability of banks, you know, to lend for infra. Perhaps your understanding is correct, but then that gives us, you know, greater opportunity. In any case, we are a very active lender in the power sector space, and we started lending operations in infra space as well. So I think the current situation may lead to, you know, for REC to capture some high quality asset where earlier the competition from banks was very severe. Maybe that may not be there, and those opportunities may be available to REC going forward.
Actually, banks in any case are not lending for the infra. In case you see the private sector banks, ICICI, IDFC, they are nowhere there in case of the infra financing. It's only the state sector banks which are there. So they virtually lend to REC. Instead of directly taking exposure in the projects, they lend to REC. And on that basis, REC takes an exposure on the projects, because REC has the capability also for evaluation of these type of projects.
So, and just one question. So these, it's a clarification on these regulations. So the regulation talks about only the project finance. So say a bank is doing a bridge finance kind of a loan for a renewable project before the project finance comes in. So that bridge finance kind of a loan, even though you're doing it for a capex plan, that doesn't get covered under this regulation, right?
There is a definition of project which is given under these guidelines. So we have to go by that definition. So these type of bridge financing which they are doing, or even if we are doing a RBPF or these type of funding, so that won't be covered under this. Because DCCO in any case has to be there for these type of projects.
Got it. Understood. Understood. Yeah. Very useful. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Saket Yadav from India Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. So thank you firstly for providing great clarity on potential impact. As you said, there seems to be no impact on P&L, book value and network. Only tier one gets impacted a bit. So on that, my question was that given our return on network is as high as 22%, and next year we are expecting some write backs, especially from KSK, Mahanadi, etc. Do you think even in case if we get strong growth like 17-18%, still our tier 1 capital should actually improve in the next 2-3 years, given our network return on network is going to be much higher than incremental loan book growth? Is that understanding correct?
Next year with the write-backs which are expected in respect of these stressed assets which are likely to be resolved, so there is not likely to be much impact as far as these provisioning norms are concerned. So there won't be much impact on the tier 1 capital also in the next year. In going forward also we will have to just see as to how the situation fares up, because there will be incremental profits also which will be generating.
Absolutely. Yeah. That was my question, like increment, do you think incremental profits will be higher than or will more than make up for any sort of going ahead, like from an ongoing basis, with the write back and incremental profits will be more than, will provide more buffer to you to sort of address the, any potential impact on tier 1?
In case you see the last 3 years profits, they are incrementally increasing year by year.
Right.
They are also going forward and with the return on equity of about more than 20%. So there will be 70% in any case will be going towards the net worth itself. 30% we have to declare by way of dividend. Remaining will be, in any case, will be incrementally going towards the net worth itself.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jigar Jani from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Just two. One, have you got or done some calculations on what would be the impact existing on the Tier 1 capital based on this guideline? And secondly, on your targets for disbursements next year, what would be our target and how that would be split across the different segments of generation, D&D and the infra, and how much of it would be like greenfield and how much would be refinance, if you have some ballpark figures. Thank you.
As far as the first question is concerned, so we have not made any calculation as of now, because we will be representing to the RBI. We have to just see for the final guidelines. So whatever impact will be there, in any case, the comments are to be sent by 15 June. So in case they come out with the final guidelines before the first quarterly results, then in any case we will be having the impact there in the first quarterly result itself. But in case nothing comes up to the first quarter, then that case we will be taking the calculation in the second quarter. So as such we have not made any calculation. First we have to represent to RBI and let's wait for the final guidelines to come.
With regard to this mix of the different loan portfolio, right now our share of renewable energy is about only 7% of our total assets. So it will gradually increase to 30% in next 5 to 6 years. So every year we see that incremental growth of 5%, 5 to 7% growth will be there in, as far as renewable energy is concerned. Conventional generation, our total share is up at present 29%. So this will also increase to say every year it will increase by 2 to 3%. Distribution, distribution transmission about 40%?
40%.
Distribution transmission is 40%. Part of transmission that will get under the green energy corridor gets covered under this renewable energy portfolio actually. Distribution sector will be able to maintain that. Because RDSS is going to be there next 2 to 3 years. Thereafter, as I had told you, that there will be huge CapEx requirement for upgrading the distribution infrastructure. Distribution transmission portfolio will remain like that only. And whatever the
generation and renewable.
mostly conventional generation renewable will increase, and some part of it will come from non-power infrastructure logistics also. Going forward, by the end of 2030, I told you that 30% will come from renewable, 15 to 20% will come from non-power infrastructure logistics, and 50 to 55% will come from conventional generation, distribution, and transmission.
Yes, sir. And thank you for that. And any disbursement target for next year, and how much would be greenfield, and how much would be like refinancing next year, say, in terms of disbursements?
This year, last year you might have observed that our non-capex disbursement was quite high. Actually, it was to the tune of 1,51,000 crore. But this year, our capex disbursement are going to jump quite substantially, and we are targeting minimum 1,75,000 crore. Mr. V.K. Singh would like to clarify.
Yes. So mostly, I mean, we are targeting, as we mentioned, we are targeting two, three areas, which of course include generation space, renewable energy projects, and of course the infrastructure and logistics. Minimum that disbursement we believe that can happen based on what we have done already is minimum 1,70,000, 1,80,000 crore. Current year we are targeting, and this target is likely to go up depending on what sanctions we do in the current financial year. And on your second question on refinancing, we are very, very active in refinancing space. You might have seen that we did some market deals last financial year, particularly in renewable energy space. There are some of the projects, group of projects financed through foreign currency borrowing was refinanced by us. We have currently such proposals at our desk, and we will continue to target this particular space going forward as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for answering my questions.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sumit Hizi from UTI RSL. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So my question is on this book value impact. So you're stating that whatever the provision recovery is going to happen in, say, next 1 or 2 years, we're going to offset this, you know, impact of this provisioning requirement by this regulation. So when we look at like 3 to 4 years sort of a view, considering this thermal, which we are incrementally very, you know, positive about the growth as well as this renewable, how do you see this going to impact in, say, like next 3 to 4 years?
Next 1 or 2 years, there won't be any impact, and subsequently, in case any impact is there, our net worth in any case will also improve because of the profits which will be generating. Since our disbursements are also increasing, loan book is increasing by 17%. This year itself it increased by 17%, and we are targeting similar increase in the years to come. So accordingly, there won't be much impact. Whatever the impact of provisioning will be there, it will be offset by the profits which will be generating.
Okay, so like in next 3 to 4 years also, no meaningful impact you are seeing in the book value?
Yeah.
Okay. And sir, regarding this cost of fund, you are mentioning that, you know, this cost of fund is going to further reduce going forward. So how we are doing this, basically reducing this cost of fund?
Yeah, only one thing is there, the book value, there won't be any impact at all. So it's not impacting the book value, it's only the tier 1 capital that is being impacted. So neither in this particular year, neither in the years to come, there will be any impact on the book value.
And with regard to the question on cost of funding, you might have seen that our cost of fund has come down by 15 basis points from 7.28% to 7.13%. And the share of our external commercial borrowing has increased from 24% to 29%. We have two cheapest source of fund available. One is 54 EC bond, that is capital gains tax saving instrument. That is about 40,000 crore. That also will increase to more than 50,000 crore. That's what we are targeting. Collections are going to increase. Then our foreign currency borrowing is with the innovative hedging techniques that we adopted. We have been able to bring down all-in cost to around 6.6-6.7%. So right now, external commercial borrowing is more attractive as compared to domestic borrowing. But going forward, there might be case that domestic borrowing becomes cheaper. So we are continuously evaluating the emerging situation. Whichever is the cheapest source of fund available, we are targeting those funds so that bring down our cost of funds.
Sure. And sir, lastly, what's your view on the overall power sector for next 5 years?
Overall power sector, I can see tremendous growth actually. You might have observed that power demand has increased by 8% last year. And in the current financial, in the month of April, power demand has increased by 11%. So it will may touch about 2 days. In next 5 years, power demand is likely to be on upward trajectory. As the power demand increases and there is improvement in the operational and financial efficiency of distribution company with the introduction of revamped distribution sector scheme and late payment surcharge, the overall health of the utilities is improving actually. With the improvement in the health of DISCOMs, the consequent result is that the health of the state GENCOs and TRANSCOs are also improved, because distribution is the sector from where they get the revenue, and this all state GENCOs and TRANSCOs are getting paid on time nowadays. And going forward next 5 years, there is huge increase in the renewable energy portfolio. But this challenge that since renewable energy is intermittent in nature, we need to have commercially viable storage solution. So that is a technological challenge. I hope that a lot of research and development work is going on. And if say there's some breakthrough is there in hydrogen fuel cell technology, then perhaps we might not have to go that aggressively for coal-based generation capacity. The storage solution becomes a cheaper option. Then green hydrogen, green ammonia is going to come in big way. Ministry of New and Renewable Energy has already set up green hydrogen mission, and government the amendment in Energy Conservation Act has already been effected, which has mandated that Government of India can lay down the prescription for the consumption norms of the different green energy. So for green energy consumption, this trajectory is being worked out actually. But to start with, from refinery and fertilizer sector, there will be gradually increasing the consumption of green hydrogen. Thereafter, the steel sector would also be covered. The decarbonization economy, we can see that all the ministries are taking very proactive steps. Overall, I see that huge growth potential in the 2 digits as far as power sector is concerned.
Sure, sir. Thanks for the elaborative response. And sir, lastly, on the asset quality front, do you see any part of the segment will going to get season in, say, next 2-3 years, be it thermal or renewable?
As I had told you that we are willing to take hit on our margin, but we are not going to compromise on the asset quality. That is the clear-cut reason which our company is having. So there is no compromise on asset quality, be it conventional generation or renewable energy or infrastructure logistics. We are not going to compromise on asset quality. We are also targeting only good entities. And you might have observed that last 9 quarters, not a single new NPA has been added into our kitty, and we hope to maintain this track record. And since we are targeting to become net zero NPA company by FY25, we would like that to maintain the good asset quality, and no new NPA should be added into our kitty.
Sure, sir. Thank you. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you, Sumit.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sandeep Jain from Baroda BNP Paribas Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Just one kind of data keeping. What is the cost advantage if we raise in green bond as compared to your book cost of fund? I think in the April you have raised some green bonds also, right? What is the incremental cost of that?
The all hedge cost of the green bond which we raised in April of 750 million was 7%, 7.01%.
And normal would be somewhere...
Domestically, in case we were raising the funds, so they were at that point of time at about 7.7 to 7.75%. So there was a differential of about 75 basis points. While in case we go for the term loans, they're even cheaper, but they are on floating basis and these were on fixed basis.
Surely. So in a way, we can understand there is a 40-50 basis point kind of arbitrage is available.
Not 40-50, more than that. And in case of the yen bonds or which we had raised, that was at about 6.48%. So it depends upon the currency also. We are raising the funds in different currencies and we are swapping some of the USD term loans or bonds which we are raising, to different currencies, that is CHF, Swiss francs or Euro or JPY, so as to have the arbitrage there. And there also we are able to get a differential of what, 50 to 60 basis points. So roughly you can say from domestic cost of borrowing, it's roughly 100 basis points cheaper.
So in a question on the earlier answer, when you said when you are lending to the renewal guys, right, the cost of this draft regulation, say if it is coming at that point, whatever it is the return in the draft regulation, it will come. So what you are trying to say is that when we will lend to the renewable or green energy, the reduction in the cost of benefit will be available so that the provisioning cost will not impact at the overall PAT level. So we can assume that the increase in means the impact would be around 50-60 basis point because of this provision?
The impact at present we cannot say, but whatever the impact will be there, we can maintain the same lending rate without increasing. In case we can bring down the cost of borrowing, say by 10 to 15 basis points, so that instead of passing it on, we can maintain the same lending rates. So whatever the impact will be there, that can in any case be absorbed by that itself.
Yeah,
so there won't be any impact. The viability of the project is ascertained on long-term basis, not on short-term basis. So they have ascertained the viability of the project on the lending date as of now. So in case we are able to maintain that also, the viability of the project in any case will be there. There won't be any impact on that.
Sir, it is also submitted that while approaching the project, we do the sensitivity analysis also. So thereby, if any, we take into account if any increase is there in the near terms, that we take into account, and if the DSCR is maintained, then only the project is financed. Say for example, if I am funding at right now at 10%, we take into account up the sensitivity analysis up to 11%. So even if it goes up to 11%, the project still becomes a viable. So we have no problem at all. We don't need to worry.
Okay, so you are saying the project IRR would be more than enough even if the current rate or if we increase the rate kind of thing. So the project owner will make a definite IRR even at the higher rates also.
Yes, correct.
Okay. That sounds interesting. Fine. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Vipul Kumar Shah from Sumangal Investment. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I am referring to your presentation and slide number 17, where ten major borrowers you mentioned, and the amount is 2,000 crores. So, what percentage of these loans are guaranteed by state governments?
About 40%, roughly 40%.
So my question is, balance 60%, what is the road to repayment? Because their losses are coming down, but still they are making losses. And if they don't generate sufficient cash, what is the roadmap to the repayment?
Losses reduction. RDSS has made clear cut, made provision for that. They have committed the trajectory to bring down AT&C losses, the difference between average cost of supply and average revenue realized. The trajectory has been committed by the distribution companies based on the state cabinet's resolution. There is support by the state government, so that we are quite sure that in order to avail Government of India grant, they will be able to maintain that trajectory. Otherwise, this 97,000 crore Government of India grant is there for 3 lakh crore scheme RDSS. That is acting as incentive to adhere to the reforms being carried out by the state government, and they will be able to maintain this trajectory of bringing down the AT&C losses and the difference between ACS and ARR.
And also the because of this RDSS reform, all the utilities across the country have started taking measure, and we have started seeing the outcomes also. The AT&C loss, which was 22% 2 years back, came down to roughly 16.5, and then it has now further come down to 15.5. So as a matter of fact, with the interventions that Government of India has introduced to RDSS, we are seeing this particular loss trajectory coming down.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the follow-up opportunity. My question here is, what sort of you also highlighted that a lot of government reforms and initiatives are sort of helping help to get better. Now, of course, on the growth side, I see and I agree with you that opportunity are immense. That now government is also coming with the conventional generation capex plans, and of course you have opportunity renewables, and of course upgradation of T&D infra. But when it comes to sort of your yields. If this SEBs, you know, financial health improvement, it keeps happening as per the plan and they becomes better, will not you see a structural pressure on your spread or yield? Because I mean, SEBs will be far better, say, 5 years down the line from where they were 2 years back. So what do you sort of, how do you see, I mean, your yield or spread playing out, particularly to the loan given to the state utilities? Thanks.
Thank you, Avinash, for asking this very pertinent question. Yes, or spread, because I have seen that utilities, some of the utilities have improved from C category to B, their rating has improved. So their interest rate comes down because for A category, B category, some interest differential is there. So that impact on spread would be met by our increase in the volume, the kind of growth that you are seeing. There will be, with the improvement in the rating of the utilities, the spread would be slightly affected, but that will be able to meet through an increase in the volume of the loan book.
So, I mean, so on the sort of, you know, that your NII side, I understand or agree with your comment, but just my question was more on the, will you see structurally, not today, say a medium term, 2-3 years down the line, a pressure on your spread. So again, I am not going with quarter, but if I look at the kind of annual trend, say, if you today operate at a 2.7-2.8% spread, structurally, will you see this spread coming under some pressure over 2-3-4 years kind of a tenure?
No. In fact, spread is going to improve actually. As I had told you, that coal-based generation capacity is 94 gigawatts and we are targeting the business share about 40, minimum 40% business will come to us. So the margins are much better as far as coal-based thermal capacity is concerned. Large hydro also we have good margins.
Yes,
pump storage projects, then non-power infrastructure logistics also we have good margins. So we do hope that our spread is going to improve further, not going to come down. It may go up to 3% actually. 2.82, it may increase to 3% actually.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question of the day. I now hand the conference over to management for closing comments.
On behalf of RAC, I would like to thank all the participants for asking very inquisitive and constructive questions, and hope that we have been able to answer your queries and on the various issues to your satisfaction. And we hope to have continuous interaction with you, and we'll have more of such interactive sessions so that if there are any questions on your part, we should be able to give proper reasoning for those queries. And we hope to have a collaborative efforts with all our investors. Thank you so much.
Thank you. On behalf of DAM Capital Advisors Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.